We'll be talking about stewardship of sexuality and addressing issues of sexual abuse also. And on Saturday, looking at the issues of relationship, gay and lesbian relationships, and relationships outside of marriage in a heterosexual context. So that's the frame of what we'll be doing in these four sessions. I brought along some overheads for this evening. I have been serving on the Task Force on Human Sexuality of the ELCA, along with 17 other people from across our church, from different areas in the ELCA, geographically, people who are lay people, folks who are theologically trained. And the document became available, this one, in January, and I've just brought this along. It's a little smattering of the kinds of things that have been happening in the news media. Several of these out of the Lutheran magazine. The first one, when it was released to the press, an original copy talking about that Lutherans should rethink their stand on gays, the report says. That's the Star Tribune in the Minneapolis area. Sexuality Study Urges Deliberation. This is Karen Bloomquist, who is the Director of Studies at the ELCA, who's heading up the study process on this. Our Bishop Chilstrom, who is head of the ELCA, encouraging study about sexuality, and then a group of folks who got together and studied it and found some flaws in it. So I'm sure people will continue to do so, but I'm very glad to see that there are differences of opinion happening and the dialogue is taking place, because that's what this particular document is about. So a little background before I go on with those. In 1988, there were a number of our synods of the ELCA who asked for, in their resolutions to the larger church body, that a study on sexuality be developed, and that from that a statement on sexuality be put in place. Our former predecessor bodies before we came into the ELCA, both the American Lutheran Church and the Lutheran Church in America, had statements on human sexuality. The LCA one had been adopted back in 1970, and the ALC one in 1980. Some of the events of the early part of our ELCA as it was formed was that there was an irregular ordination of three people out on the West Coast in California who were gay and lesbian people. There was a lot of news media coverage about that and a lot of discussion that went on within our church. So some of the requests that that study take place were generated from that, as well as other things currently going on in the ELCA that would prompt that. The first study document that was developed by our church is this little one, called The Church and Society, A Lutheran Perspective. And it's kind of the foundational document that says to all of us within the ELCA how we're going to be looking at issues in church and society, how it is that we'll be forming such task forces as this. And this one talks about...
I need to... Have you put this on for hearing impaired gentlemen?
Sure. Getting wired here. All right.
About 4 inches below your chin. Right below your V there. Yeah,
right below the V. Nice, I had a V today. Just below the V. All right. If others of you are having difficulty hearing, I think there are more such units available that could assist you.
One more?
And let me just say that as soon as he gets back in the room around the corner, perhaps he can bring something for that that one more about that. I was commenting that the first document that was put together by the Church and Society Division and Commission for Studies was this one on Lutheran Perspectives. And it provides in it, talking about our community becoming a community of moral deliberation, saying that that's part of what Lutheran history and tradition is, that we are a group of people who in faith gather together and dialogue about particular issues, and from that we come to some stances and places from which we make our decisions about how we are to proceed in the world as Lutheran people. And this one is saying that such deliberation within the church should have people from differing life experiences, different perspectives, different interests, and it says as far as possible, people such as the following should deliberate together and with others. Those who feel and suffer with any particular issue as it's being addressed. Those whose interests or security are at stake. Pastors, bishops, theologians, ethicists, other teachers in the church, advocates, and experts in social and natural sciences, arts, and humanities. Well, that's a tall order to put together in a task force. And there are, as I said, I think 17 altogether in the task force. For those of you who have the document, on the preface page, it has a list of all those people who are serving. And I have it here. Dr. Jim Bailey from Dubuque, Iowa, is a teacher of New Testament at the Wartburg Seminary there. John Ballou is a gay man from Atlanta, Georgia. Joy Bussert in Pastor and Campus Ministry in Minneapolis. Alma Kino down in Santa Fe is a Hispanic member of our task force and a mother. Does a lot of work with the Synod there, helping people become bilingual to work in that area in Lutheran ministry. Bruce Davis was in Campus Ministry and now is a pastor in a parish. And I'd like to let people know that issues of sexuality have continued with us in the now 3 years that we've been together. Bruce and his wife have had a child. He brought in a copy of the sonogram, so we got to see a picture of this child before it was born in that process, so that's been kind of exciting. Bishop Lowell Erdahl is from the St. Paul Area Synod and is the representative from the Conference of Bishops on that task force. Jennifer Hurst, a college student, who just told us of her engagement when we were together last. Dr. Eric Gritch teaches theology at Gettysburg Seminary in Pennsylvania. Paul Hansen is a retired pastor in California who was former Missouri Synod. I think approaching 80. Our age span is from about 21 to 80 years old on the task force. I'm there. Marjorie Klebeman is a mom of three children from Yorktown, Texas, a small town in southern Texas, and has been a wonderful voice to help bring us back to reality when the task force gets too wrapped up in theological and heady spinnings of implications about all these issues to say, that's all dandy, but what do I tell my daughter when she's about to head out on a date for the weekend on a Saturday evening and somebody wants to get in the back of the Jeep? You know, so that kind of reality. The Jennifer First, who's a college student, also has been a really good voice in that way. Edie Lohr serves on our church council of the ELCA and is a director of a Lutheran social service agency out in the East. Lynn Lorenzen teaches theology or religion at Augsburg College in the Twin Cities. Eldon Olson is a director for consultation with clergy, a counseling agency out here in Washington State. He's in Seattle. Ruth Rexine directs Lutheran Social Service in Nebraska. Stephanie Taylor Dinwiddie is an African-American woman who is a PhD in education and keeps telling us, you know, the material that you put together here is fine if you're through college and you have that access to words and language. How is it that we can make this accessible to another reading level? It's part of the question she kept bringing to us. And Dr. Larry Yoder teaches at, and the name of his college has escaped me, he's in North Carolina. Karen Bloomquist is our study director, and there's a number of adjunct staff representing different areas that are involved in this process with us also. I just spot on part is talking about the becoming a community of moral deliberation, and that this is an excerpt from that, saying that we approach the topic of sexuality as members of one body of Christ, and that's why we need to listen to the cries, fears, and joys of people. To listen deeply is what a lot of this task is about. We do so in relation to the witness of Scripture and the historic confessions of our church. And these are the authoritative bases of our faith in dialogue with contemporary experience and knowledge, and the things that guide us in these matters regarding sexuality. This particular document is a part of the process on the way toward a statement of our church which will address human sexuality. This is not intended to be a document which has the answers in it or says to us this is how things ought to be, but if you've looked through it already, you will notice there are a number of different perspectives and views and questions that are raised, more questions than answers. What this document does is ask us to reflect on Scripture as it applies to the subject of sexuality, to talk with one another about our questions related to sexuality, to review how sexuality has been viewed and ordered in biblical communities, look at particular Lutheran perspectives, explore what it means to be responsible sexual persons, and to talk about specific current issues which should be addressed by the church. The three particular issues that have been raised in depth in the document are issues of sexual abuse, gay and lesbian relationships, and relationships outside of marriage. And those, the fifth chapter goes to in depth. The first chapter is an introduction to them, providing some data about them. The responses that come into this document, there are gray pages in the back which are intended to be a response form for you as an individual to fill out, or if you back into your home congregation want to gather a group to study this together, a group response could come in. I think a group here at Holden has been talking about it together so that their responses can be sent back in as well. The date for submission says in this document that it's June 30th, and that has been extended to December 1st. So the timeline has been pushed back a bit so that we can have more time for information and responses to come in from the people of the church. We'll have the task when we get together in August to start going through that material. I understand that we've been having a half-inch thick to an inch thick of mail every day, so we're going to have our hands full of things to review when we're together. And our next task is to start putting together a draft of a social statement, which will be circulated hopefully in time for review at the Synod Assemblies in 93, and also a final revision in 94 and 5 before it goes to Churchwide Assembly for its adoption. One of the things I would ask for of folks here as you start to study the document is to pray for this task force. I think it's a big job ahead of this group of people, and part of that is that this document represents about 50,000 words. And the final thing that we're supposed to put together before the church is to be about 4,000 words. Now, how it is you wrap everything up neatly that we need to say about human sexuality in 4,000 words, I too will be amazed to see. The Presbyterians have recently been in a study of sexuality, and some of you may have covered the news about that in the last year. There was a document some 200 pages long that their task force put out to their church for review. The United Methodists are also in such a study, and the Episcopal Church currently also. There have been some 35,000 copies of this document circulated within our church to date. The publishing house has put together, and the Episcopal bishops have asked for a special printing of it to be made available to encourage discussion and dialogue within Episcopal communion too. So you may find friends and colleagues of that faith who are saying that they're looking at the same material. One of the tools that's used throughout this document are one of lifting up different voices. This is just an excerpt out of it. Part of our early process as we began to meet together was to say we want to have input from the people of the church as we start this process. So we went out to 50 congregations across the ELCA to talk with them about sexuality. Those groups were, I don't know how they jumble those things in the computer, but we had some list that came back to us of where we should do that, to have a small congregation in a rural setting and a larger one in a city, and ones that were more multiculturally established in their church membership. And some of the responses that came back represent a variety of viewpoints, of perspectives about sexuality. So part of the literary tool that gets used in here often, and they're often offset in light gray boxes. If you look through the document, you'll see them. There'll be three different boxes that will represent different views. One talks about, in the first chapter, about sexual abuse. Someone saying that sexual abuse reveals things about the sex role stereotyping in our society. Some others say, but men already feel powerless in our society and we need to address this in a different way. And yet other people say, another voice about that. And there are many voices. And this tool is used to try to say that there's a continuum, a whole range, a spectrum of responses that people have about sexuality, and that we need to be engaged in study together regarding it. And a foundational early on here saying that the study builds upon and explores implications of foundational themes from our previous social statements. I'm looking on page 5 if you want to look at that in the left-hand column. And it talks about sexuality being God's good gift given to all people, that sexuality permeates all that we are and involves far more than genital sexual activity, and that genital expression of our sexuality reaches its greatest or full potential within a loving, enduring commitment of marriage. talks about commitment being the context for sexual expression gets raised here. Do you have questions about the document itself and what the task is about that you want to address before we go on?
How long have you been together so far, your task force?
How long has the task force been together? I think we first met together in July of 89. And we originally had been charged with putting a final document before the church in 1993. But with the development of a statement such as this for deliberation in the church, that timeline has been moved back to 95. And I was pleased at our last meeting to learn that everyone on the task force has agreed to continue for 2 more years. Although I don't know if I'd signed up for this task at the first and they said, would you give us the next decade of your life to deal with these issues? I'd have signed up so readily. For those of you who are planning to do some study of this when you're back home, the section back on page 50, one talks about using the study in a group setting and goes over some of the things about that study in a group and some of the things that may make it difficult for us to have the kind of in-depth conversation we might want in these sessions this week, because these sessions are supposed to be put together in such a way that you can drop in for an hour if you just came in off the trail and haven't been at anything else all week long. These, when we're having the conversations, the hope is that the group would be able to covenant together to be consistent about being there, to try to set the frame for having the conversation be one that takes place in a safe setting. So be cognizant of, if I'm saying I strongly held views about one thing or another, that there may be the person sitting next to me who has been sexually abused. It may be that they have someone in their family who has, or someone who's gay or lesbian. A child who is living in a relationship and not in marriage and living with a partner. And those are maybe secrets that they haven't told anyone about in the congregation. So that's some of the things that happen here, trying to set some ground rules for confidentiality, that people might say, you know, what I'm sharing with this small group, I don't want to go beyond here. I don't want that said back in the congregation at large, what I just told you. I don't feel comfortable with that. Understanding that it's not a therapy group or a debate to decide which side's going to win, but more listening to one another about our own understandings and experiences of sexuality, looking at scripture, tradition, and contemporary knowledge. So that would be a guide that people could use to begin those sessions. And it's suggested that in a congregational setting you have 5 or 6 sessions in which to study it. Hopefully an hour and a half to 2 hours in length. So we're going to kind of be collapsing some of this stuff together this week for our discussion. All right. This last one is an overview of what the chapters are in the book. The first one, which is kind of the format that we're using this evening, is talking about voices and issues of sexuality today, trying to establish a context for that dialogue. The second one looks at human sexuality in the Bible. Third, Lutheran perspectives related to sexuality. The fourth, looking about stewardship of sexuality. And stewardship often is a word that we don't hear connected with sexuality. Sometimes in other settings, although my experience of it in churches is that when people hear the word stewardship, they start covering their pockets and are concerned about what happens next in terms of the plea for pledges for the year or other such things. Sexuality and stewardship fit together in this context also. Then the fifth chapter looks at those particular issues of concern that I mentioned earlier. Sexual abuse, gay and lesbian relationships, and relationships outside of marriage. I found that the document has provided an opportunity for lots of people to talk about sexuality who say we haven't really ever had a chance to do this in our church. Our society is one that's pretty sex negative in terms of sexuality. There's a lot of jokes and innuendo about sexuality, and not a lot of places where we talk about sexuality and intimacy or how that is building up of my relationship or to my family. some of the questions that we have asked of people, and when we gathered with those first 50 congregations, were for them to talk with each other about what they learned about sexuality when they were growing up. And we'll be doing some of that here today together. Some of the mixed messages which people respond saying that have come from the church, I would sum up in these two little pieces to say that people say, I either learned that sex is beautiful, don't tell anyone about it, don't talk about it, or on the other hand, perhaps that sex is dirty, save it for someone you love. That we have that mixed message that comes from the church, you know, that both of those things are there as we talk about sexuality. So knowing some of that as we begin the context is part of what we'll do. I'm going to put a couple questions up on the board for us, and I'm going to ask you to find one other person to pair with, and we'll take about 10 minutes to talk about these two questions. And the first is, what did you learn about sexuality when you were growing up? And specifically, what do you recall learning from the church? So if you just talk about that in pairs, we'll have some feedback here to the larger group, and then we'll have another round in small group together. So what did you learn about sexuality when you were growing up?
From anyone.
From any source. You want to talk about where? Take a moment, introduce yourself to such a person.
Yeah. Well, in our day and age, that was not discussed. I mean, that was just I don't know where I learned it, but I know I never learned it from my folks, and I never learned it from the church.
Yeah.
It was just a hush-hush subject.
You might be surprised to find out it's not only... I don't recall much learning about sexuality when I was growing up. The kind of learning that I did get at home had to do with the menstrual cycle, and my mom gave me a little book from the Modest Company and sort of set me in bed. At school, it was a similar sort of thing. They divided the boys and girls into split, you know, by their sex. It took us into the sweatiest little weight room off at the corner of the gym. For some reason, that was the darkest little place to show this film, which left us with an impression about this, you know, secrecy, dirty stuff about sexuality, that they took us into this particular place to show the film. And they showed it first to the girls and then to the boys. And it was the same sort of film about female reproductive cycle. We didn't learn anything about boys, but they had one over on us because they knew about us. All right, what about someone else? About your messages from church. Anybody have any learning at church?
Well, sure. I can't even believe I'm talking about this, but I have to say that I have a loving father who happens to be a Lutheran minister, mm-hmm. and he is a dear man. I love him dearly. But the thing I remember was, first of all, he said, "Don't think you're going to date those Catholic boys across the street." And they just moved in, nice guys. What in the world brought that up? But we never talked about sex at home. But one day, he started talking up some kind of there was going to be some sexuality films on Sunday night, and I remember being so mad because we never talked about any of this stuff at home, and here I was going to be forced to go to church on Sunday night and watch this darn film, and it really made me mad. I never did even see it. I ran off and hid somewhere. That was the only thing we never discussed much.
The other thing I hear reported is that people say that in confirmation class there was a unit on sexuality that we talked about. Mm-hmm. So the church has had a history of talking to young people about sexuality before they're supposed to be doing it. And when we hit adulthood and we're involved in perhaps in sexual encounters, then we cease talking about it. Then it's not okay any longer. But that kind of message is there.
Well, I remember the church just telling you what you shouldn't do.
What you shouldn't do.
Yeah, that there were the lots of no, we should do this, you should, you know, mm-hmm. and all the no's. I never heard anything about, you know, what happened, you know, what should you do? What's that all about? Mm-hmm.
No church or no parent ever said a word to me. I was raised on the farm, so of course I'm sure that's where I learned something about how babies were made and stuff. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it was never anything. But you said it so well when you said it was a dirty thing, but save it for, and mm-hmm. that's about what it was, because they would talk about the girls that had to get married, you mm-hmm. know, and that, so you always thought, oh man, that wasn't very good.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to join your pair with another pair now, and talk for a moment about these two questions. What or who, what kinds of things have particularly influenced your views of sexuality? Either positively or negatively, it might be helpful to think about both. Has it been books or movies, a particular individual, that pastor in the church who you did have a conversation with? Talk about that. What are the things that especially influence? And to talk for a bit about how have your views and society's views changed in your own lifetime about sexuality? How would you sum that up? Just sort of kind of look at it decade by decade with each other. So in two groups, two pairs formed together, so a quad.
Yes. I tried one somewhere in high school.
That was not something that was kind of
I'm
So focused together in our culture,
yeah.
That we use sexuality to, as the means to sell everything from toothpaste to tractors, or buy this particular brand of bubble gum because it's 3 seconds when this commercial is over, you'll be kissing someone because that's, you know, it's the view, the way the commercials go, and that's the image and the impression they leave with us. And we use scantily clad women to sell cars and many other kinds of things. That becomes part of the things that permeate our whole society because the way sexuality is out there. What else would you lift up?
I guess my parents were my biggest influence on
your parents?
Mm-hmm. On how I do sexuality. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think judge from their viewpoint or their stamp.
Okay. So by their example, they were also vocal teachers with you about sexuality?
No.
But by their example? Okay.
I think for me, counseling especially influenced my view of my sexuality. Okay. Also, a spiritual director.
Spiritual director.
Who happened to be a Trappist monk.
Okay.
Who was very, very helpful. And gave me the message that God wants what's best for me, whatever that is, including if that's different than what society would tell me is best for me.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So
good.
also relationships.
Relationships have helped shape for you. Okay.
I have to say relationships with coworkers and friends, and as I get to know people and value them as dear friends and learn about their relationships, and then I'm challenged to think there are a lot of different relationships out there and valuing them as people, and it kind of challenges the way I was brought up, which was very, you know, traditional. Mm-hmm.
If I may share, we had a brief conversation, a suggestion of a document that was made available in the early 1960s from the Quaker Church in England, which was addressing all of these same kind of questions, and that, you know, nearly all of my lifetime, and surely my adult lifetime, one church after another has been wrestling about these same kinds of questions. So. What about that, the way views have changed? Huh, you say, all right. You say, well.
I can't believe it, how things change.
Uh-huh.
You can't watch a TV show without knowing they're going to head for the bed.
Okay, yep.
You know, and the kids are, they eat all that stuff up, you know, they just...
That's true, and the change from what is an R rating?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
From 10 years ago to now?
Right.
And that's what it seems like, sexuality and how much skin is exposed and what parts, mm-hmm. that establishes what rating it gets.
That's right.
But you think about the way our society responds in terms of violent acts, the violence that gets represented in TV shows or movies and the rating that gets is very different from sexuality.
Yeah.
Says something about that message too. All right. Anyone else?
We talked about how we thought it's had this huge swing, but that it's kind of just beginning to take some swings back as far as just kind of anything goes, everything's great, and kind of, you know, and I think the AIDS thing was a big part of that, and
yes.
people's, you know, just that sometimes that freedom didn't always bring good endings.
Okay. So seeing a sort of come through a sexual revolution of sorts and into perhaps a more conservative swing.
Yeah.
If you will.
Yeah. Perhaps it's that conservatism that's coming back.
Thank you.
I wonder once in a while if the idea of monogamy is being challenged, our idea that there's a heterosexual couple, you know, we tend to be in our society, if there's lots of divorces, you know, many, mm-hmm. many couples or the homosexual couple, this idea of what a unit is, I think is being challenged right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear questions.
What it's supposed to look like.
Yes, questions about, does a relationship have to inherently be entered into for a lifetime?
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the places where that challenge is coming. Let me share a little bit about from the document about the three particular areas of concern, the material that's presented, just an introduction to them in here. The first one is talking about sexual abuse, and it's just a series of kind of fact-finding things on each of the topics that I'll read off. It says, 2 in 5 women in the United States have experienced an attempted or completed sexual assault, either as children or adults. 1 in 5 to 1 in 3 girls has been sexually abused by the age of 12. 1 in 11 to 1 in 6 boys have also been sexually abused before the age of 18. And that the reporting has been less around sexual abuse with males than with females, so perhaps the data is different than what we currently have. Most sexual offenses are not committed by strangers, but by people who know the victim. Most child molestation is committed by family members, friends, acquaintances. The known cases of sexual abuse have steadily increased throughout the century. Then looking at gay and lesbian relationships, it says from 3 to 15% of any population is likely to be sexually oriented primarily towards members of their own sex. The figure that I usually hear used is 10%. This is saying that perhaps there's a range. Lesbian women and gay men experience various forms of discrimination and rejection both in society and in the church. Gay bashing is commonplace in our society. It says slightly over half of socially active gay men and lesbian women report that they have experienced some form of personal violence. Men are more frequent victims than are women, but among women, lesbians of color are more likely to be targets of violence. Lesbian and gay youth are not only subjected to violent assault due to their orientation, but they are 2 to 3 times more likely to attempt suicide than our other youth. We had a federal study that came out looking at issues of teen suicide in recent years, and they're finding that some 30% of attempted or completed suicides are of young people who are struggling with sexuality issues. Yet often, being part of an agency that goes in to talk at schools when there has been such a suicide attempt or completion, it's often not part of the curriculum to deal with those young people to begin raising questions about sexual orientation and addressing those as well. Looking at genital sexual relationships outside of marriage, our young people who are especially susceptible to the influences of our society tend to engage in genital sexual activity at an early age. More than half of youth today have had sexual encounters by the age of 17. Every 30 seconds, a U.S. teenager becomes pregnant. Every 13 seconds, a teenager contracts a sexually transmitted disease. I think that it is the teenage to early 20 population that represents over 85% of all the sexually transmitted disease cases reported in a year's time in our country. It says, for many people, the AIDS epidemic is a foreboding reminder of the dangers of sexual promiscuity. The estimates are in our own country that 1.5 million people carry the HIV virus, which causes AIDS. Families are breaking apart through divorce. Infidelity within marriage is widespread. Some studies indicate that 30 to 40% of married men have been unfaithful to their wives, while married women's infidelity is not far behind at 20 to 30%. The proportion of unmarried women between ages of 15 to 44 who are sexually active has risen throughout the century, peaking at 76% in an 87 study. And they said that there is no comparable study that appears to have been done about males and sexuality. The questions about sexuality and sex role of males and females in our culture and the way that males are acculturated about sexuality, often is for them to have had some sexual experience. Females, however, are not supposed to have had any. The kind of be the gatekeepers on sexuality, the ones who say no because somehow guys can't, are the kinds of double messages that come to about males and females talking about sexuality. I would pose that if it has become the purview of the schools in recent decade to do more about sexual education of our young people. And often that sexual education is in the realm of helping people understand sexual and reproductive plumbing, if you will, use that kind of analogy about it. It should be, and perhaps is, the purview of the church to be helping young people understand about sexual electricity, ins and outs of that piece of being attracted to one another. What does that mean? And what does it mean when I feel that? And how do I begin building and developing relationship, and that we do have a major role to play in the shaping of those values of which all of us use in making decisions about our sexual behavior. Let me just open it for questions for the last few minutes that we have here together. Any comments that you'd like to make over sort of the outline of what's been expressed regarding the document, its history, where we're going this week, or more comment back on this avenue?
I think your last comments are interesting in the sense of when I reflect on clergy I've known and so on, you know, they're not better off, frankly, in their training about how to deal with these issues than the parishioners.
Yes.
So, you know, blind leading the blind, it's going to take quite a while before, you know, I'm sure the seminaries are waking up now to that fact, I would hope so.
More slowly than
issues.
I would hope, I'm not right. But
it's blind leading the blind, basically.
Yes. The two places that people are most apt to turn when they have questions about their own sexuality or questions about sexually transmitted diseases, or what's moral, what's appropriate, all those kind of questions. The first place they turn to is their physician, and the second place their clergy. And yet it's been relatively common for them not to have any courses on that, specifically in seminary, not a required course. At Lutheran Northwestern, which is in my hometown, the largest of the Lutheran seminaries, there is a course, but it's an elective. So you choose whether you're going to take that or not. I have been part of being faculty with a joint course that's done between Luther Northwestern Seminary and United Seminary about sexuality, and it's an experiential sort of small group films discussion about many topics over 6 days time, full days together. And it's been interesting to me to note that in the evaluations that come back, one of the questions we've asked was, has this experience been a helpful one for you? Invariably they say yes. Do you think it would be helpful to your parishioners or others with whom you'll be working? No. And it is that sort of, we have come through something now and sort of understand sexuality in a different way, but it's kind of too dangerous to turn loose to the people at large, is the way that we have interpreted that continual response that we've seen through the years. So there is a kind of fear out there about sexuality as well, that if we, it's something, it's a demon that if we turn it loose. Yeah. And yet our language of all of our documents we've had in the church about sexuality always start out talking about being God's good gift and to be used, and we were to be stewards of it, and yet there's the fear motif that goes with it too. Right. Other comments? Well, let's close for this evening, and we'll be getting together other times during the week. Thanks for participating.
Thank you.
I feel like we're very about it.
they have been on board for so long.
Yes.
But I don't really
next week sometime.
And that is
good.